With traffic, errands, and parking, cars can be a chore.
But a great car can be an adventure, a getaway, and a prized possession.
Whatever your budget or family require, there's a car out there you'll love. We're here to help you find it. I'm Todd.
I'm Paul. And this is the Everyday Driver Car Debate.
We're nearing the end. We're not just close to the end. We've actually shot already our last piece of the big sedans.
There is light at the end of the tunnel, for sure.
And we have winners. We have people these cars are going to much. Look, I'll go ahead and put it out there. Because of all the madness we've gone through with these cars, a part of me just thought we're going to reach out to the people that could win them, and they're going to be like, you know what? No. And so what we did.
Thanks for the email. No.
Exactly. What we did this on camera. It'll be part of our last piece. We actually live sat here, you and I, with cameras rolling, and we actually just went to a name sorter with our huge list and just picked random names.
Right. We dumped all the names and, out of GoFundMe mm-hmm. into this random name generator yes. and recorded our screens yes. so therefore we couldn't be accused of any impropriety uh-huh. whatsoever and just push the button.
And what's crazy is that we, in order to defend ourselves, we picked a first name and two alternates for each car.
Right.
And then
right.
we reached out to both of the first names, and Ryan and Shane both said, absolutely yes. Ryan is getting the pickle fork, and Shane is going to get the Phaeton, and now we're into discussion about how does it get to you and all that kind of stuff. But those cars are really going away, and new ones are really coming.
They really are. The Maserati comes with four really nice, really expensive winter tires.
Well, so does the Phaeton. Yeah.
So does the Phaeton. Yeah, it's a bargain. Well, I don't know how many tickets.
It's a bargain at almost free. I mean, in both cases, it's almost free, but yeah.
Almost free. And now you guys have those cars.
Not yet.
It's sad.
But they're going. They're
going
to go.
Yeah, they're going. But yeah, it's just sort of weird and sad and monumental, historic. And we're on to the next. Crazy enough.
We're going to do cheap sports cars. We are going to have that full reveal happen with a video coming up. We're going to do cheap sports cars, and we're very excited about that. As you guys know, we've been talking about it for about 3 months, about doing this again. This first year has been so much about you and I just decided to try it.
Yeah.
Okay, we just bought these old things just to see what we can do. We have actually Auto Tempest stepping alongside us to be the primary sponsor of the new thing. We're going to do a video a month. It's going to be at least 12 videos of these new sports cars. We've got a whole thing planned. Much more planning is going into this time than last time. We've been working on, like I said, for about 3 months. So we're excited to get those cars. Those new cars, we're not going to share what they are yet. Those new cars are probably coming within the next week.
We're in acquisition mode again. And the reason for this cheap sports car challenge, inexpensive sports cars, the reason this came up is because of you guys.
Absolutely.
All the emails, not all, but many emails in the inbox refer to a low budget but still wanting a third car or a second car or something that's sporty. And you all are telling us the requirements are rear wheel drive, manual transmission, two seats only, inexpensive. But that brings up a host of questions. Should I?
Yeah.
Should I not? What's the maintenance going to be like? Mm-hmm. What's ownership going to be like? And we thought, we're going to do this ourselves and answer these questions. We will continue to do your debates, of course.
Yes.
But so many of these came up. And, you know, the list is sort of like, well, I thought about the Miata, but I wanted something more unique and different. And so we thought, okay.
We're taking this on.
Let's go do unique and different.
We are taking these risks for you. Just like we did, let's be honest, with the Quattroporte and the Phaeton. We are taking the risk so you don't have to. The other difference with these new sports cars is that a year from now, watch this space, we are going to raffle these off at the end instead of deciding that
right.
up front.
Right.
So that's a whole other thing that will happen down the line.
We'll bring more people in. So
yes, for sure.
You can hear about it.
You can watch the whole series and you can have a chance to be involved. So we're excited about this whole thing. That is one of the many things going on. Oh.
We just thought that, you know, how people say adrenaline is a drug. Anxiety is our drug.
Yes, it
and
is.
We wanted to keep it going because that's how we function on camera. It's
we're
just
so
anxiety about this car blowing up.
We're so excited about doing
so
this.
Really, that's
genuinely
the whole reason
we
it continues.
I actually, before we go on to the other announcements, I have to tell a son story.
Okay.
That I haven't told you yet.
Okay.
And I'm having mixed emotions as a father.
I sort of like it when you hold back on me until the podcast. Same with your dad's stories, too.
Because I'm wondering when I need to address what I've just seen.
Okay.
School's back in, okay, with new restrictions
right.
as the world has.
Right.
School's back in. So I am dropping my son off in the drop-off line in the mornings, okay?
Okay.
Instead of parking and walking him in, which is what I've done forever. And I like doing that, but I'm dropping him off. So that means I roll into the drop-off line, where it is SUV, Outback, SUV, 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 Outback, Range Rover, Cayenne, SUV, 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 minivan, minivan, me in the Lotus.
Right, right.
In the yellow Lotus. Because, of course, I say to him, what car do you want to take? Because my son gets to pick. And, of course, he picks the Lotus. Here's my concern. Two mornings in a row now, he has climbed out of the Lotus there in the drop-off lane where all the other kids are getting out.
Okay.
And he has said to whoever the closest kid is who looks at the car, some sort of variation of, yeah, that's my Lotus. And I'm going, I don't know if that's appropriate. I don't think what?
That he is looking at his Lotus when he gets his driver's license, that it is his Lotus.
Oh, I don't know that he's doing that level of ownership. It's just funny to me that he's already doing that thing that I associate with a snotty 14 or 15-year-old that is just, look at my car. Don't you think I'm cool because of my car?
Yeah, look at
me. He's doing that at 10. And I have created this monster, let's be honest. But at the same time, I'm having this mixed emotion thing because as a father, I'm proud of the fact that he likes cars, he likes the Lotus, and he's excited to have it, and he's proud of it. That's all cool. But I don't know if we need ego about it. I don't know if we need this is my Lotus.
Do you think he understands?
I don't know.
Because I think it's coming from a pride standpoint not realizing that it could be associated with ego, and now you're just a snotty kid whose dad drives a Lotus.
Yeah. And I also think it's funny because I bet you 9 out of 10 times, if you like took a random swath of the 20 cars in line with me when I drop him off in the Lotus, I may be in the cheapest car.
Of course you are.
Because it's Park City and the drop-off line. So there's that as well.
When pickup trucks are $80,000, you are. Yes.
Well, exactly. So I'm just wondering. So far, it's kind of made me laugh. I'm wondering if this is one of those things I need to address.
I was going to say, are you going to rein it in? You're going to try to step in here?
What I need to do, I need to do the proper father thing. I need to kind of ask him his headspace when he's doing it, because I'm adding all this father stuff to it. I'm adding all this grown-up stuff to it. You know what I mean? Because I think what it really is a very honest thing from him, but he loves getting out of this car at the drive-through line, the drive-up line. He just loves it. He loves getting out. And he has said two mornings in a row to whoever's closest that he knows, yeah, that's my Lotus. I'm like, I want to caution you, son. That's kind of the conversation I think I need to have, is just be careful about how that comes across. But I'm glad you are catching me in real time parenting right now as I tell this story. Yeah.
Hmm. All right. Well, you're going to have to keep us posted on that. What we find out his headspace is. Guys, we've got a great podcast for you. But first, we have TV on Motor Trend on Saturday, August 29, 2020, is Daily Fun, which is a rerun of actual usable fun sports cars in central Utah. And we got some amazing footage. We hope you enjoy that. Set your DVR. It is 4:30 Pacific, 7:30 Eastern. And so, yes, that's still whenever you watch it in the plus 7-day range. That helps our Nielsen ratings.
It
really
does, for
appreciate
sure,
that.
Time.
That will be coming to Amazon soon as season 7 and eventually YouTube. But for now, we do have TV on YouTube, which is our Corvette Z06 comparisons.
Yeah.
Think about it. The C8 is not yet available as the Z06 of this recording. So it is the C5, 6, and 7 generations.
That's from season Z06's. 4 of television is actually now on YouTube. And of course, all of our seasons are available on Amazon Prime and on Vimeo for those of you worldwide. We greatly appreciate those of you that watch them there. The first two seasons are actually available on Pluto TV if you haven't seen it prior. You can see it there as well, and that's free. And we've got more seasons coming to Pluto as well. We're trying to get these old seasons out as many ways as we can so as many people as possible can see them. We also are building, a different YouTube channel for the test drives that we're doing of these. Honestly, it's an overflowing amount of press cars, which is really cool.
It's cool.
So we're placing them on their own channel so that we can do these individual test drives of the two of us driving them together. It's very much a real-time test drive, kind of has the feel of this podcast. That is building as we speak. We almost have 1,000 subscribers, which is a big milestone that helps us unlock. It's like unlocking treasure chests at YouTube. You got to get to certain milestones
of things. It's just a video game. It's all it is.
I'm waiting for the big boss level. Yeah, exactly. So anyway, we're almost to 1,000 subscribers. If you guys would help us get there, that will help us move everything forward. We're going to have a custom URL and a bunch of other things to make it easier to find. But right now, youtube.com Everyday Driver is the channel you can normally find us, and you can click the recommended channels on the side and you can get to it there. That's one way if you're already on YouTube. Or you can go to our website, everydaydriver.com. The YouTube tab there has both channels listed. You can click directly there. Because right now, I'll admit, the test drive channel has a gibberish URL. I'm not even going to try to share it with you. Just follow the links.
Right. Couple of great car debates. First from Michael, who has moved recently out of New York City, and he is the favorite uncle, looking for something else in his life. He already has German performance, so he's looking for a different experience. And we also have Brad K. in Charlotte, North Carolina, who is definitely looking for something special.
Summer is finally here, and with that comes sunshine and blistering hot car interiors. You know, the leather seats that you thought were a great idea until you scald your legs.
Luckily, all you need is a custom sunscreen from our friends at Covercraft. They're awesome. They're amazing. These foldable sunscreens fit perfectly in the windshield of your car and keep your car cooler when you're off enjoying the sunshine.
These custom sunscreens come in a variety of colors, and they're an affordable and simple way to keep your car cooler in the summer and protected from damaging UV rays all year long.
We swear by our custom sunscreens. I love it. It's one of our very favorite car accessories. Remember, you can get 10% off your car sunscreen by using the code EVERYDAY right now at covercraft.com, or you can follow the link from our sponsors page.
We're jumping in first with Michael G's debate here, who writes to us. He discovered the podcast a few months ago after he moved out of New York City. Bought a year 2000 Boxster S as a second fun car.
Love it, love it.
And somehow, tying into what we've been telling you, he stumbled on the Cheap Sports Car episode on Velocity Channel then. It was Velocity, now Motor Trend Cable Channel. And he said, after discovering a lifetime of driving in the city, he was a car enthusiast with an unrequited obsession.
Yes, he's discovered he's now a car guy. Get out of Manhattan, and now he's realized, I really am a car guy. He dailies back into Manhattan with a 2012 Acura MDX. At least he did, because he found it unbelievably boring, but it was a really good commute car. And then Manhattan, as a result of COVID and everywhere else, locks down. You can't go anywhere. There's nothing you can do. You can't do a thing. You're locked in your apartment. And he has a favorite niece. And she had no way to get anywhere. And he went, you know what? I'm enjoying the Boxster so much. Why don't you, listen to the word here, borrow my MDX for a while? She's had it long enough now that he realizes he's never getting that back.
He's going to say, being her favorite uncle, he took it upon himself to improve the quality of her life, lent her the SUV the first week of May 2020, and hasn't seen or heard from her since.
And may never. He figures, honestly, holidays is pretty much the only time he may even see his own car. Yeah.
He says, you know, he realizes it's not the best errand car, but since it's 20 years old, it's not precious to Michael. So he doesn't mind leaving the office parking lot or
the
taking
Boxster.
It to the supermarket. And so, yeah, that's the Boxster.
Yeah.
The Acura is
long gone.
Never going to be seen again.
So the Boxster's become the daily, which he's kind of laughing
is.
About. But it, but it,
a what daily a great car, in though. New York City.
I love this. I think it's great.
It's cool. So as time goes on, there are several things that are crystallizing to Michael.
Okay.
Again, as Todd said, he's only going to see the Acura again at family dinners. But now he's going to need another car for when the weather gets cold. Yes, I'm going to tell you to put winter tires on the Boxster and keep driving it.
As would I, yes.
But he's still thinking he needs another car.
Okay. All right. All
right. The Porsche is fun. It's a manual with a ragtop. It serves an obvious purpose, he says. What he's looking for in his second car is a reliable daily that is more fun and engaging than an SUV, which is, you admit, it's a low bar.
Yeah, that can be accomplished, yeah.
He doesn't haul much anymore, but would like to be able to take his bike in the back.
Okay, all right.
Doesn't mind the folded down seats, taking off the front wheel to get his bike in.
Okay, all right.
Other than that, he's flexible. He's considered American muscle. He's curious about the new Supra. And he already has German performance in his life, so he's looking for a completely different experience.
I like it. This is good.
Now, the budget is flexible to the extent that he doesn't like spending more than $40,000, which instantly means 50. Just a nice round 50. Come on. Just round it up.
Yeah. Michael's heard the podcast before.
$10,000 between friends?
It's, well, but right? This is how it happens. This is exactly how it happens, for sure. Yeah.
Okay. So, what are our thoughts here?
He says, first off, Michael, you have to keep the Boxster. You said
yes,
maybe you could sell it. I think it has awakened car love in you, and it has become a car that you are thrilled to drive anywhere, doing anything. I think it's a clear recommendation that you just must keep that car. Let's spend 40, or in Paul's case, 50 grand, and find you something else that does the winter slash bike duty, but is still fun. Because that's the other thing we have to do here, is you've discovered driving fun enough that we can't put you in a commuter box.
No, no, certainly not. I've been thinking, and Michael, you know how we've told you we've been getting a fair amount of press cars lately.
Uh-huh, yeah.
There's been one that has excited both Todd and I so much, we're going, what's wrong with this car? Why doesn't everybody own this car?
Yeah, okay.
This is cool. And you might not think it's cool. It's in the sleeper category. It's in the, really? One of those kind of category.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's
yeah.
not German. It's not American. It's not Japanese.
You're narrowing things down rapidly, but keep going.
Trying to carve out continents
yeah,
here.
You are, for sure.
Nations. Well, I think there's only one that is
really
a different experience.
Okay.
That you can put your bike in the back so you keep it clean and, of course, locked up.
Okay. All right.
It's a very different experience, and it's very much of a – it's still a driver's car in a sense. It's not anywhere close to your Porsche.
It's not an enthusiast car, but it's got worthwhile driving dynamics.
Yeah, I think you know where I'm going.
I know exactly where you're going.
And I've been shopping for you, Michael. This car is a 2019 slightly used Volvo V60 T5 R Design wagon in blue metallic for $38,750.
That's a find.
With 6,000 miles.
You are kidding.
There's multiple V60s out there.
Wow.
I found 2020s slightly used, 700 miles, that are still under 40 grand. If you want to go more and you want to go hybrid and you want to go all-wheel drive, okay, sure, you're going to pay more. Mm-hmm. Maybe 45, slightly used. Maybe it was a dealer loaner or something like that. But otherwise, brand new. Mm-hmm. The S60 we recently drove was above $64,000.
It was.
That's
yes.
The fully loaded hybrid.
It's brand new.
A notch under Polestar.
Yes.
There's other variants in there, though. And slightly used, 1 year old. Everything's still the same. Mm-hmm. The interface is gorgeous. We do have a test drive coming out on this car. Mm-hmm. But I think you need to go shopping for this Volvo because it's stylish. It still says car enthusiast, but it's so subtle. You have to know, and you'll feel like you've discovered something.
The wagon element takes it another step into who are you as a car buyer? It's a very unique thing. Don't get a brown wagon. In spite of us being car journalists, we don't recommend brown wagons. Also, do me a favor and buy a Volvo in something other than white.
Oh, yes.
I feel like they all come in white.
So what I found was, but I'm turning my laptop around. You're seeing the blue metallic.
The blue's perfect. The blue's gorgeous.
Gorge.
That looks great. And that's a find, too. That's a good recommendation. I really like
scroll.
That.
Just put it in Auto Tempest. I'm scrolling.
Yeah.
I found multiple 2020 T5 Momentum. A lot of these are front wheel drive. Do you need the all wheel drive though? I mean, winter tires. I told you, tires in the Boxer. Be perfectly fine.
Totally, yeah.
Front wheel drive in one of these, save a little bit of money. I'm saving you money. 40-ish, somewhere in there.
Okay.
You've got
your
choice of the V60. Usually they're T5, maybe T6 Momentum, depending on options, drivetrain. But
Volvo is gorgeous. Hysterical because doesn't matter what that badge is on the back. I can tell you what's under the hood. It's a 2-liter 4-cylinder. The badge just changes what they screwed to it. You can get base 2. This is all Volvo does right now. You can buy the most expensive car Volvo on the planet right now, and it has a 2-liter 4-cylinder in it. It's just they add a supercharger, a turbocharger, and if need be, a hybrid motor to the same 2-liter that, by the way, was in the base car with nothing.
This is good business.
I haven't decided if this is genius or just a disaster waiting to happen, but right now this is what Volvo does, and it has so far been brilliant. We'll see.
That's the car that I'm landing on for
you.
That's
nice.
I could go SUV, but you said no SUVs.
Yeah.
That's what you kind of alluded to, and so that throws out 3/4 of the cars on sale today.
It does, yeah.
And I thought, I don't want you in a big sedan necessarily. I do want you in something different, stylish. Wagons are awesome. Wagons are all over Europe. You put your bike in the back.
I see it. There's a lot there. Yeah.
The interface alone. Buy this Volvo for the interface alone.
It's very cool.
In the nav system. It's brilliant. Just the fact that you can see with XM radio all the channels in the vertical height of the screen. So you can see probably 15 channels, but you can see what's playing.
Oh, interesting.
You can actually, whatever. Yeah, yeah. Okay. So you're on, you know, 90s music or 80s music.
Sure.
And you can see what's playing over here on Lithium channel.
I didn't realize it did that. I hadn't seen that on there. That's cool.
I have never seen any other system do that.
That's
so I can
see,
do I want that? And you can keep scrolling. Do I want news?
You can actually see the song before you jump there.
Yes.
That's cool. I love that. That's
just
great.
Just that feature alone is phenomenal. Who else
does
that?
And then it's a Volvo wagon. That's good. I like it.
So just, you know, take in consideration that kind of thinking pervades the rest of the car.
That's really good. I like that. That's a great recommendation. I did not go there. I went into two different categories for you, Michael. I went traditional hatchback, and then I have a car in the class that Paul's talking about as well. But I think what you need here is a hatchback because we need to keep that enthusiast fun, but we need to have that utility. And that is pretty much the build sheet for a hot hatch right there.
Sure.
Okay.
Sure.
Now I'm going to go with the first one I have is the only front wheel drive. And that is the Veloster N. You could buy a new one and be thrilled.
Delightful.
If you get there's a dual clutch coming, so you could do that if you wanted to do that for commuting, but you could also get really good manual. Put winter tires on that. You will love it. It's got plenty of attitude.
Brand new, they're 30.
Yes, exactly. Loaded brand new, they're 30. I'm saving you money. So that would be a great choice. I'm a big believer in that one. Then I was thinking all-wheel drive hatches. We have two different options you should drive because they couldn't be more different. If you want more the commuter chill-out car, go get yourself a Golf R. You'll love the interior materials. The Boxster has kind of warmed you to the German feel of things. So
you'll
like that interior. It has all-wheel drive when you need it. Put winter tires on it anyway. It's a Haldex system, so it's not a performance all-wheel drive system. But the Golf R's are genuinely fun, but they're also a car you can just chill out in.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Or if the Boxster has made you a like hardcore enthusiast and you do want all-wheel drive, the Veloster's not doing it for you, which I think would be great, you should get yourself a used Ford Focus RS.
Think so?
Why not? Get it in that like gray that it comes in, so it's a little bit subtle.
So it can stick it in drift mode and drift through Times Square?
I love the blue. Yes, please do. Send us that video, by the way. I love the blue, and because it's me, I would get the blue on that car. But the problem with the Focus RS, my concern for Michael is that car in its softest suspension setting is still a hard ride. I think it may be too hard for Manhattan. Got me concerned. Which makes
me think, a bit of a commute car in this sense.
Exactly, which is making me think it might not be right. What I'm unclear on from Michael is how hardcore he wants to be now. Because he doesn't.
Sure.
He's found this car interest. He's found what the involvement is like. He talked about how bad the MDX was. So I think the Golf might be right because of how the usage is. But if you really want to stay hardcore, you could go Focus RS and they're cheap used.
It's a balance. The Boxster's not the roughest ride ever, but you know you're in a sports car.
Totally.
Sporty car.
So then I thought, if I want to actually balance out the Boxster, you have your small, lightweight roadster. We need your all-wheel drive opposite car.
Okay.
Then I did go with one sedan.
You did? Okay.
But I think it's perfect for you. I didn't go full wagon like you did because I think this still works. Kia Stinger GT all-wheel drive.
Those are awesome.
Buy that car, be happy.
Fold the seats, you can get your bike in, no problem.
Absolutely. It's got the hatch design, the hidden hatch there. Your bike will fit in that great. The all-wheel drive system is phenomenal. The guy that we know here locally that was asking us a while back, our friend Robin asked us a while back.
Yeah.
He'd only ever driven trucks. And I mean like find the big truck in the parking lot, that was Robin's. And he came to us and he said, I want to buy a sedan that's going to be decent in the winter. What should I get? And rarely do people leave it that open-ended. And then even more rarely when we answer, do they go actually drive what we suggested? Look, you guys at the podcast do it. People that know us personally almost never drive what we suggest. I don't know what it is about seeing it in person.
Right, right.
But Robin went and drove the Kia Stinger GT on a recommendation and went, I have to have this.
Yeah.
And he drives a like flat matte gray one. It is killer. It is mean. Yeah. And he loves it. And he has become...
It's cool.
He's become the guy that is just... He is the preacher of the Kia Stinger. Anybody he meets, he's like, I got to show you my car. So I think the Stinger you would love, Michael, and I have to leave it there.
Awesome. All right. So whatever you do, Michael, don't tell your niece that you got something new because she'll be like, what'd you get? The MDX is great.
You're right. I sold the MDX. Oh, I couldn't sell that?
What is the new car? If you've got your own debate like Michael's, write to us, everydaydrivertv@gmail.com, or you can go to the website to find the YouTube channel, and that's the second tab over, and you can find both new YouTube channels.
Yes, yes.
Right there. And also, in the top right corner under the About tab is the contact button, easy way to get a hold of us, and that aggregates to the same email address.
Does.
So we see either one comes into the same inbox, and we can see that. So thank you guys for writing in.
Big time.
Really appreciate it.
You've heard us talk about drive homework because it's vital to drive a lot of things when you're trying to find your next car. Knowing your options is incredibly important. And this applies to online shopping too. You don't want to search just one website unless that site is searching all the other ones for you.
That's why we love AutoTempest. We know you've heard us talk about it before, and we hope you've already seen how far you can shop with just one search. AutoTempest pulls from all the top used car sites at once, so you know you won't miss that ideal car.
AutoTempest.com. All the cars. One search.
Brad K. writes to us from Charlotte, North Carolina, wanting something special. He says, it's not his first rodeo with cars. It's his second.
Didn't know I needed to know so much by my second rodeo.
I know.
Seems like a low number of rodeos.
Definitely seems
anyway,
low.
Anyway, yeah.
He's a car enthusiast from American-made muscle cars to German Audi sports cars. He's having some issues, though, at age 51, he says, getting in and out of small sports cars.
So you need a Lotus Elise.
Yes.
And
yes.
You'll never get out. Yeah.
Lotus Elise and a chiropractor.
There you go.
Save some money. He's always liked the TT and the Mazda Miata and wanted something uniquely special.
That's
as his next daily.
That those two are an interesting reference. The TT and the Miata as the reference cars.
They're, yeah.
Go on.
They're not diametrically opposed necessarily, but
tells us a lot, actually. Yeah.
Yeah, it does. Well, he grew up in north of Cleveland, Ohio, and he says, you know, he was into Fords and the Mustang
GT. Family
GT.
Was into Fords. They were a Ford family, and he's branched out big time.
Yeah, he says part of his younger adulthood, he's owned three Mustangs, a 98 GT, a 2001 GT, and an 07 GT.
Okay.
From there, he moved on to the Volkswagen GTI from 2008, and he had an R32, both the 04 and 08 models.
Very cool.
Which he appreciated. He loved the quality and attention to detail. And then he was introduced to the Audi RS4.
They're cool, aren't they? They're really cool.
They're cool.
They're really fun.
They're cool. He fell in love right away. A German V8 from Audi. Mm-hmm. It's a German all-wheel drive muscle car. You're absolutely right.
It is, for sure.
Until you get to the maintenance. Until you get to repairs.
It can be scary. It can be really scary.
He says,
I love that car. I really like it. Yeah.
There's sensors on the back of the motor, so they have to drop the motor at a cost of $5,000. So does he keep it? Does he put the money into it? He's not sure. Maybe. But whatever he does, he's looking for an engaging, fun, unique car to drive that needs to be a manual 6-speed. And it has to either have a V8 or a lively V6 with good power and torque. So he's looking at four-door sedans. He's looking at coupes, even hatchbacks, if it's big enough. There's a lot of those cars out there. Mm-hmm. But the restriction is the budget.
Yes.
$21,000 or less.
Tons of stuff was knocked off the list instantly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I looked around, Brad. I looked at Jaguar F-Types. They're not $21,000.
They really, really
aren't. There's zero $21,000.
they are not. Jaguar do not apply.
So I would love you to have that Jaguar because it is unique and special. Mm-hmm. If you'd like to double your budget, yes. I doubt that's going to happen.
Yeah, but we may as well bring it up because we do, yeah.
I thought you could go older. You know, I thought you could go unique and old. I thought Pontiac GTOs, those always come up because they're like $8,000.
Yeah, and you just don't see them.
They're just... easy to work on. They're just, you know, a lot of power, 2+2. I've thought of all these different cars, and I keep coming back to one of our kind of usual suspects.
Okay.
And I did find a 2014 BMW M235i manual with 91,000 miles for $21,900.
Okay.
So that is at the bottom of your price range, top of your price range, bottom of the mileage range, I would say, you know, just for the sweet spot for those cars. I only found one so far.
Okay, all right.
But I offer that to you as the sweet spot for what you're looking for because I think about you're getting in and out of a car. Mm-hmm. Going any lower than that car, you might not want so much. Still has great seats. They're reasonable. If you could bump to 25, you'll get a few more options. The mileage would be lower. Mm-hmm. Kind of depends. But that is just such a... We haven't talked about that car in a long time.
Yeah.
And I come back to that as just a great all around. It's unique. It's fun, special. They're, you know, they've dropped in price quite a bit. Mm-hmm. And I was impressed with it. The first time we drove one, we've driven many of them, Brad, on the ring and spa, as a matter of fact, and just love it. We've beat on those cars.
I like it. That's a good one. That's a good one.
I've come back to that as the car for you.
I have a few for you, Brad, because I'm not sure. The thing that's interesting here is this reference of the Audi TT and the Mazda Miata, which tells me small. And then you counteract that with, I'm concerned about getting in and out of small cars. Mm-hmm, doesn't sound like you're actually having a problem with it right now, but you're concerned about it. So I'm going with stuff, hoping to find stuff that's in that feel, but yet has more easy access.
Okay.
So I was thinking along those lines. That got me to a couple of usual suspects. And then I found a car that is not that I think might be the car. But I'm going to walk myself there.
Okay.
First off, you could very easily hear V8 with some attitude, manual transmission. Let's just go there. You could go any of the muscle cars, Challenger, Mustang, or Charger. Challenger, Mustang, or Camaro. Okay?
Indeed, yeah.
As much as you can buy engine-wise in those cars would work here, absolutely. Except you're wanting something that's a little bit unique, which kind of kills those. And also,
I think so, yeah.
You've spoiled yourself to decent interiors, or let me put it another way, to German-style interiors. And so I also think that kind of knocks those out.
Okay.
As much as I like them, as much as they fit the manual transmission big V8, I get that.
See, I love this. Start somewhere, throw it out, go in a different
arena. Yeah, this is how it happens most of the time. So then I did think, you know what? You could get a C6 Corvette, but then we have the interior question.
Hmm.
I think getting in and out of those cars, they're big enough that it wouldn't be a problem. It's very different than anything you've had.
They're low, but they open up.
Exactly.
Quite
and
well.
We've seen both people that aren't that athletic and people that are much bigger than you and I, like 6'8", get in C6 Corvettes.
True.
Okay, so there's plenty of room there. So the problem is interior is not going to hold up to your German desires. But the car is so different than what you've had, and it taps into that muscle car history you have.
Yeah.
You could get a lot for your money in C6 Corvettes. So I'm putting that out there. Then I am going to go to a usual suspect, which is the second gen Boxster.
Okay.
Go get one of those. They are very easy access, and that honestly is like the Miata thinking, Audi TT thinking with better access. And the chassis are phenomenal.
I can see that.
So what can you get for 21 grand? You do have some options. You might even find yourself a decent Boxster S. Now I'm talking 05 and above here, second gen Boxster. So that's an option there. You should try to find one of those. But I actually think the best answer is this one. And it struck me as I was thinking about that Audi RS4 that you've lusted after and gone, that's a money pit. I probably should stay away.
They're awesome.
As you've thought about it, you were responding to the fact it was a four-door V8 muscle car from Germany.
Uh-huh.
And I landed here, and there are options, my friend. The E90 generation BMW M3 four-door.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Has a V8.
That's pretty good.
A six-speed manual, four doors. That is a phenomenal car with a great engine. We really, really like that BMW. That comes up through, I'm going to get it wrong, like 2012, 2013. That range of years.
Even,
okay,
yeah, so, even you can go to 08. You can go back
I'm saying, but that's as new as they get.
Yeah,
so they're
sure,
like 07, 08 to 2012, 2013, something like that. The E90 BMW M3. You're looking for the E90. That is the four-door with the six-speed. You just don't see those. You see plenty of the E92s, the coupes, and some of the E93 convertibles, but the four-doors are not very common. That's a discerning choice that you see that and you go, oh, that's a cool
are
car.
Are they 21,000 or less?
I found a couple pages on Auto Tempest.
Did you really?
I did.
Pages?
I did. I was very impressed. Now, I will say this. All of those at that price are over 70,000 miles, and some of them are like 130.
Okay, okay.
That engine, you're talking about engines with the problem with the RS4. That engine has a known rod bearing issue that I am certain will be cheaper to fix than anything on that RS4.
Okay, okay.
It's a known issue. If the problem happens, it can kill your engine. But if you get ahead of it, it's like the IMS thing for Porsche.
Sure.
You replace it and you move on. Okay. So I'm landing there. E90 M3 V6. Enjoy that V8. Have a nice day.
That's great because it is German. He loves that part. That engine is thirsty, but who cares?
Yeah, that's not what
we're
talking
about.
And
the rod bearing issue, if you can find one that's already been done, even better.
That's true as well. Yeah.
But on the other hand, the way to look at that is if it hasn't, you know that you'll be the one to do the maintenance correctly, how you want it done, and you'll have your service records from there. So you'll know,
That's good.
It hasn't been done, but you know what? I'm going to set the car on a good path from here on out. Okay, yeah, you got to spend some money up front to do it, but then you've got a great car.
But here's the other thing about it, though. I want to put this in your head.
Now I'm looking. $21,000 for
here's the other thing about
that,
Brad.
I loved that car.
Any really good V8 you buy at $20,000 is going to need something.
Yeah.
Yeah. So just accept the fact there's going to be extra money in it anyway. Get the M3. I'm telling you, man, that's a fun car. We're back with many audience questions because you guys are awesome. Honestly, I haven't done a good job in thanking you guys in a while. The number of questions you come up with that takes us on fantastic tangents every time we do this podcast, it's phenomenal. It's a lot of what makes this podcast different and fun every single time is you guys with questions. I know we never answer all of them. We always grab a bunch. We're diving in with new fun. I've got Jeffrey Johnson's writing on a Facebook saying he lives in Texas and he only ever bought summer tires. Good man. Good man.
I saw this.
But he said, you know, there are some days in Texas, and I've been there, man, when it dips below 30 degrees and those tires get rock hard and it gets a little scary.
Yeah,
so his question is, should I get some all seasons for the winter? And I think, yeah.
That's not a bad idea.
Don't get winter tires.
Yeah.
It's just not worth it. You're too low and it's not going to be cold enough consistently. But get yourself some good all seasons. You know, Michelin has those, what are they, AS4s now that are getting some rave reviews as really, really good performance all seasons. I mean, you can find, and that used to be a misnomer. A performance all season tire wasn't very much performance and wasn't a great all season. But actually at this point, they are pretty good out there, you know? So, I mean, I actually put all seasons on my wife's Cayenne instead of full summer rubber because it blows through full summer rubber. So we do all seasons and then full winters. You're in a similar situation. You can do full performance tires in the summer and then all seasons in the winter. I think you'd be really well balanced.
Talking about the big sedans, Ty G has a question. If we had to give one of these two cars to your mother-in-law, which one would you pick? You're the only one with a mother-in-law.
To my mother-in-law, it would have to be the Phaeton because she could not handle the Maserati.
Yeah, few people can handle the Maserati.
And also because, let's be honest, she is a longtime Lexus owner, so involvement is not her thing, okay? It just needs to run. And at least the Phaeton runs every time you start it. It does weird things like not have an air conditioner that works and leaks on the drive and these kind of things, but it runs. The Maserati is a total just like dice roll. And then you have to be an involved driver, which she is not.
You do. Here's a finicky, potentially time-bombed Ferrari V8 powered car.
How much more do you like me now, mother-in-law? Yeah, exactly.
All right. Michael C. asks, is it just Michael or does it seem like Hyundai is trying multiple design themes across their lineup?
Oh, good. I'm glad you're answering this.
There's very little consistency. Really? That's interesting. I suppose that you could look at it from a per vehicle standpoint that they're looking at various the theme for that particular market, and they want to say either more aggressive or less aggressive or something like that. But to be honest, I see similarities in surface and line from say the Palisade to the new Sonata. I guess I look for that. And I see it, but you're not going to see similar proportions because they are different cars. So you're not going to see the exact same line executed in the exact same way. Weirdly, though, I will say you do see it across Lincoln's lineup. On the other hand, they're not building cars per se. They're doing SUVs, so the lines still kind of work. Mm. But you'll see it on Volvo. Volvo does an excellent job translating from SUVs to sedans, similar lines, and they do look like they're all in the same family.
That's good.
I can see that, but... I've got two arguments for that. Does design have to all look, do all the cars have to look the same? I give you BMW as an example. Mm-hmm. The 2 Series all the way up to the 7 Series. Well, that's just a miniature 5 Series. Well, that's just an overinflated 3 Series. Mm-hmm. Do you want people, customers to say that? Mm-hmm. Is that good? Or do you want people to say, huh, well, they've designed for this market and that's a special, unique Veloster N. Mm. That's the only car in their lineup that looks that aggressive and has that much.
And
wow, well, that's cool.
I'm all for manufacturers having cars that look different under the same brand. I'm kind of all for that, but I know we're trying to do corporate look. I know that's always a big thing.
The particular things that designers usually pull out are grills, the front face of the car. Mm-hmm. Kia has the tiger nose. Yeah. That's what they call it.
Yeah.
Hyundai does have... I don't know what they're calling their front grill shape, but it's similar.
Some of their cars, it's just ugly. Anyway, yeah, I said it. I went there. It's ugly.
Yes, you did. You fold it, you squish it. You can still see the same kind of lines. The proportions are different, though, but you can still see the similarities in that front Sonata grill all the way through the new K5. You see it. Well, I guess that's
the Palisade,
but still,
is to SUVs what the first-gen Panamera was to sports sedans. Phenomenal and not attractive.
Watch our video, our review of the
Hyundai
Palisade.
You and I don't agree.
I will explain why it's interesting and different.
I get it.
And also, do you want car manufacturers to get out there and try things and push boundaries?
I do want that, yes.
Yeah, because we know in German car world, it's always safe.
Yeah.
We don't want to alienate customers. And we do want you to be introduced to the A4. And as you progress through your career and as you make more money and you move up to middle management, you can now afford an A6 or an A7. Ooh. You aspire to an A8 when you, you're later
you're
in life
right.
and you're top management, senior level. But they want you to stick with the brand throughout. So that's why they look a certain way. And that is a real thing, by the way.
Absolutely,
it is.
Yeah.
Corporate progression.
That's so funny.
So you stay in that same family, and then, you want the R8 because now you've got the bonus. You saved your bonuses
for a few years. You're about to retire. It's time for an R8.
You need the R8, and you're going to stay in that family. That thinking has pervaded, but then when car companies come out with a model that just doesn't really exist, and where do you put it? Then you go, what? Where did that come from?
But it's cool when it gets through.
Other manufacturers just kind of try different things. So I ask you, I put it back on you. I say, Is that a good thing for people to, you know, manufacturers to try different things and still keep some similar as much as they can? Mm-hmm. Or should it just look, well, that's just a squished and raised, the X5 just looks like a, you know, you squeeze the 3 Series in a vice or something. You know
no,
what I mean?
Right. No, you're absolutely right. Yeah.
That's ultimately a personal decision, I feel like.
Interesting. Sean Fisher said on Instagram, how would we recommend going about learning to drive a manual transmission on your own? He doesn't want to mess up somebody's Turo car. He doesn't know anybody with a cheap manual that'll let him ruin their clutch. How do you go about it? Honestly, Sean, and this is going to be weird, but honestly, the best way to learn manual is to buy a manual car.
Mm-hmm.
And the trick here is you've got to have a buddy who can help you buy that car that does have the ability to drive manual to help you do the test drives and to get it off the lot and to get it home and that kind of stuff. But I submit to you, if you bought a manual transmission car that you intend to learn on, you'll be able to drive it well in a week. Not as well as you will ever get to drive it, but I'm saying you will be competent in a week of driving that car every day.
Okay.
I fully believe that. Right. I mean, it's like anything that is like, think of a sport. I'm going to go with skiing. You can get down the mountain on day one. Okay? You can get down the mountain.
Sure.
On day five, you're so much better than you were on day one.
True.
But
true.
On year 10, you're still refining.
You're hucking you're, off
but,
a
but you're
cliff.
Still refining yeah. what you do true. On skis. True. This is driving a manual. You never are just like, you're never done. Okay? But getting to that level of competence, I guarantee you, if you drove that car for a week and everything you needed to do, you'd be competent in a week. You'd be, give me a situation, I could drive it. I may not do it perfectly, but I can do it. So you're going to need to just buy a cheap manual transmission and accept it. And I think if you can pull that off, you'll be there fast.
I hear $1,500 Saabs are a thing.
Yeah, with circular gear patterns. It's just a circle now, just best guess.
Andrew M. asked me, what is the best seat material for me? Leather, cloth, suede, leather, suede combo. I have to admit, I do like the seats in my Cayman. They are a combination of leather on the thigh bolsters and the Alcantara on the middle section of the seats. And I do like it from a material and visual breakup, but I like that the Alcantara just grips me and I don't move in that seat. And then you add the thigh bolsters with leather. I do like the mix, to be honest. Leather seats across the board are great. Absolutely. It depends on the textiles for the cloth seats. It really depends if I like those or not.
Yeah, it varies a lot.
Sometimes they can be like burlap. Other times, you know, you don't want to wear shorts.
Yeah.
Other times, you know, I think, okay, this is nice. And believe me, that is something designers are constantly thinking about. The design team for interior materials. There are debates. There's meetings. Mm-hmm. Monday morning meetings galore on what we should do and the working with the manufacturer and suppliers to do all this. That is a huge industry, as a matter of fact.
Leather seats in a super hot climate is always a questionable thing with shorts. You've all probably done it. It's quite painful to climb into a car with leather seats in some place like Dallas or Houston and be like, ow, I'm going to leave a mark. That's not good. Jared Rose 1 asked on Instagram, do you see this one? If we had to do it over again and pick different big sedans for the big sedan challenge, what would we have picked? So not the ones we did pick. What else would we have picked? You know what I would have liked? Mm. And it was going back even further, but the 90s 7 Series.
Ah, yeah, that's good.
I like that car. And I think it would have just been horrifying to keep running. But I still think they're amazing. That to me was the pinnacle of the 7 Series design. It was just such a great era for BMW anyway. So that late 97 series would have been the thing. And those were honestly, I'll be honest, while searching specifically for a Phaeton, I kept seeing those pop up because I couldn't help but look. Some of those were like $1,500. And I just kept thinking, that is simultaneously exciting and horrifying.
I have two, actually. I am really in love with the Audi S8, which is a metallic cousin, essentially.
Yeah.
To the Phaeton. It was essentially a Phaeton rendered in aluminum at about 1,000 pounds lighter. The 01 to 03 Audi S8.
Those were cool.
I fell in love when I first saw the movie Ronin. I love those things. They're amazing, but you always find one that is just beat down. Yeah. I found one that was a manual transmission converted over one time. And I just thought,
that's crazy.
Like those, but also the car that you probably heard I was considering before the Quattroporte, and that was a Jaguar XJR, the mid-90s, all the way up to 03, I think. That
very
XJR,
cool.
Just so cool looking. The J-gate shifter and I just like them. They're
we aren't
sweet
doing
looking.
Big sedans again, though. We are moving on.
We are? How about XJRs? They're cool looking.
Noah writes a question that I find fascinating because he wrote to this podcast with this question. And that's this. How do I justify getting a different car when I don't really need a different one? I just want a new car experience. That's pretty much what we do every day. Honestly, Noah, I will justify it to you by saying, go on and do that. The thing I've said before, I'm going to repeat it here, and that is cars are one of those things that you can just swap. Don't do it with significant others. Don't do it with houses. A lot of that's much more involved than just, I want to swap my car. I mean, yeah, you got to sell your current one. You got to buy another one. But essentially, there's not that many steps. It's not that hard to do. And the consequences are pretty low. Worst case scenario. Look, I've been there. Worst case scenario, you buy a Lancer and the engine blows and you lose some money on it. That doesn't feel good. I'll admit it. But ultimately, in comparison to some of the other risks you could take with your finances, if you're going to get into a similar price bracket, you know, I wouldn't advise go massively into debt just for a new thing. I wouldn't do that. But if you're going to have kind of a step across, why not get a new experience? Speaking of new experiences, Christopher, he writes in. He says he's not writing for himself, which of course means he's writing for himself.
For
he
a friend.
Has a Scion FRS that it was his first ever fun car. And he loves it. And I'm thrilled to hear it. And that's great. But he says he's writing for a friend. Would a 987 Boxster be too similar in feel to an FRS to be considered for a new experience? No, definitely not. I mean, look, when I had my FRS, you and I did a lot of canyon runs where I was in that and you were in your Cayman GTS and we would hoon for a while and swap cars and that kind of stuff. And what I was always surprised by is how competent those cars were together, but yet how different they were to drive.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you went with a 987 Boxster, you would find, plus it's convertible, you'd find a very different experience with mid-engine and those kind of things. But yet that is a docile mid-engine platform that's not going to be prone to bite.
Okay.
So I think, because like going to the Lotus, that chassis can bite. Okay.
Indeed.
The Boxster came in really, you've got to really get it out of shape for anything to go wrong in a, what's this? Why is this spinning like this kind of scenario? Which was the dangerous
There'll
part.
Be screaming involved at that point. You will be in a low tone wondering why. You'll be screaming.
You will know you've done something wrong to get the car there. So that's the nice thing about the Boxster. But yet it does have a very different experience. The front end's going to feel very different because the engine moved behind you. So I say, yeah.
Alex HC09 asks, what is the cheapest car that can draw a crowd at a Cars and Coffee?
So funny.
The last one Alex went to, he noticed there were more people paying attention to a classic Mini Cooper than the McLaren 570S parked 20 feet away. Well, you're absolutely right. The first kind of car is anything that is in the best shape you've ever seen for that car.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I forgot Mitsubishi 3000 GT VR4s were. Look how nice that one is.
That one's incredible.
Wow. How about, you know, an Eagle Talon something from the early 90s? Oh my gosh, I haven't seen one of those in a, you know.
Yeah.
Generally, what they are is sort of like an 82 Supra or maybe the first generation Mazda RX-7. Like, I haven't seen blank in years. Mm-hmm. Or it's because it makes a connection with your high school years or your college years or your first car years. Or that was my first sports car. No way, I haven't seen one of those. And that's cool. Or again, that's the nicest blank I've ever seen in my life. Why on earth would you spend money to make that thing nice? Let's go look.
The pristine thing from back. But honestly, this is why Radwood's so successful.
Yeah.
Because it's those cars that you wouldn't actually expect, and yet you gather them all together and you go, this is cool. And you get to put on your members only jacket and a bunch of neon.
I mean,
and,
you know, you see an 81 Honda Civic and you're like, huh, wow.
I had one of those.
Look how nice that is.
Yeah,
everything.
Totally.
Look, my thing was broken and this, look, this is perfect.
Uh-huh.
And you just obsess over it. You don't want it. You want to walk away, but you just want to, wow, that's so cool.
It's also the one of one element. If you have the one thing at the car show that nobody else has that one, like at the most recent Cars and Coffee here in Park City, a guy showed up in a Mercedes E-Class. Mm-hmm. I think he was mid-build, but it's slowly becoming a pickup. And it had no windows, no doors, no rear glass, no trunk. The trunk had been turned into a pickup bed.
Yikes.
It got a lot of looks. I don't know that it was the right kind of looks, but it got a lot of looks. I was impressed that he showed up. And he parked it next to something really nice, which also made me laugh. So that was very good.
And horrified the nice car owner.
Oh, of course. DMA asks on Instagram, he said, what is beyond the Lotus Elise on the spectrum of sacrifice? Good question. I like this. It's a, if any creature comfort for road, basically no creature comforts is the only step beyond the Lotus, but it has to be road legal. And I can think of two that are even more sacrificial than the Elise, to the point that, look, when the Elise, I'm out in it and it starts raining, I kind of go bummer because I don't love driving it in the rain. It's not really made for it, especially with my new tires. But okay.
All the spinning and screaming.
The hopefully less of that.
Okay.
But we're still going to get home just fine. Okay. I'm not like I have to pull over under an overpass to shield myself or whatever. The Caterham is a step further, as is the Ariel Atom, both of which are road legal, both of which are a step even further. You can go further than that into the Morgan three-wheeler, for example. But I think legitimately now you've actually lost a wheel. I'm still talking four-wheel cars, the Caterham and the Ariel Atom.
You have to search on the internet where to buy a scarf if you own one of those Morgans.
Totally different
thing. How do I buy a scarf? Where do I buy a scarf? All right, let's talk about this. B. Warren 228 blames the death of the sedan on laughably low bumpers and overhangs.
Interesting. Okay.
If you look at the profile of a sedan over the years, it has slowly lost approach and departure angles, which directly relate to how drivable the car is as a daily. Mm. But here the example is steep parking lots, curb stops, that sort of thing. B. Warren had a lowered Supra years ago that wouldn't scrape in places that the stock Chevy SS scrapes a bumper. The slight adjustment in driving style needed to drive today's sedans, he believes, is enough to steer the average driver towards a CUV, an SUV, or a truck. Mm. Well, first of all, many times what you're hearing is just a lower piece. It's a lower flexible black urethane piece that is really designed to direct air and get better aerodynamics on the underflow of the car. Mm-hmm. That could be what you're hearing a lot. That does get scraped, but that's car manufacturers know that's going to happen. Mm-hmm. Now, interesting though, I don't know that I agree, because I think people just want to sit up high for visibility purposes, not because they're scraping. I see people scrape in every kind of car because they go straight on under the rain gutters in the streets. They take it straight on. Just go at a slight angle and you're good.
Why would I go at an angle?
They go straight on. And because the suspension is so soft, even on an SUV, they go bam.
Yeah.
And they hit their tow hook, so they hit the, you know, whatever is under there.
Scrape the entire underside of the car, north of the front axle. Yeah,
you're not paying it. Okay, fine. So that is not the case. Again, I come back to people wanting the visibility far down the road. When you're in traffic, you want to see over the top of the car in front of you. Now that everybody has CUVs and SUVs, you're looking through the glass and through their windshield to be able to do that. So it's kind of irrelevant. But for that reason, sedans have a lower center of gravity. Mm-hmm. And yes, by virtue of being lower and therefore ideally better to drive, they're going to have the lower approach angles and departure angles. And I don't see that as a bad thing. I just see that as part of car ownership. And I prefer that, actually. If I'm going to buy a sedan, I don't want it to be kind of somewhere in between a CUV and a, what is that thing?
Yeah.
Ford experimented with the Taurus for a while and it got pretty like a tall car, too tall.
What was that special version of the Taurus that also looked like I was wearing a backpack? It was kind of like the Taurus version of
Freelander or Freeloader or something like that.
The Ford Freeloader.
Something like that.
Parks itself on your wallet. It's like the Honda Cross Tour. It's a Ford wearing a backpack.
That thing.
Yeah.
What is that thing?
What is that thing is an appropriate question.
The first generation Venza. I'm like, is that a car? Is that
what does that want to be?
What is that thing?
Yeah.
But
I want to back up your play in one major thing. The number one reason that I have ever heard for anybody wanting to get a CUV or SUV, and it may be the primary reason or just a thing they list in a litany of reasons for their next vehicle, I want to sit up high.
Yeah.
That has become the rally cry of a huge number of people and a large percentage of women, my wife included, where they want to sit up high. And that lends a level of two things, safety, the impression of safety, I should be clear.
Sure.
And also the ability to see further. When I'm driving around in the Lotus and I get stopped in traffic, I am looking at the back badge of the cars in front of me. Even if that's a car in front of me, if it's an SUV or a truck, big dually trucks, I'm looking at the differential.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
There is no looking around them. And so I'm looking for my opportunity to get around them just so I can see a little bit more. I'm not saying this isn't a real thing. When everybody in traffic is sitting higher, then you need to sit higher still. And it comes all the way back around to the Fiat 500, which was purposely designed. Look at a Fiat 500 next to a picture of a Mini. The Mini, they just made the Mini. It's got a good dynamics. It's got low seating position. The Fiat 500, they wanted you to be in a small car where your seating position, you've talked about it before, the H point, the hip point was high enough that you could look other drivers, sometimes in small SUVs, in the eye. And you're in a tiny little car. It's why that car is so vertical.
Right.
It's about ride height.
We're ending it there for now, but I do want to remind everybody to go to blipshift.com. Under the shop tab, you can go to partner stores and find the Everyday Driver collection there with all of our shirts there. We are continuing to add to that. Order your shirts there. And like I said, all the ideas that we've had on the podcast over the years, we're slowly manifesting that on the Blipshift store. And they're our partners now. So big thanks to them. And you can find all of our merchandise there. Really appreciate your emails, your topic Tuesdays, your car conclusions.
It's great stuff, guys.
Keep those coming. And we're very excited to announce what cars. We're in acquisition mode. What cars next?
You will hear
for
things.
This new
it's
challenge.
It's going to be crazy. Yeah.
It's coming at you. Thanks, everybody. Cheers.